seriously popular.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
In today's episode... Did Chelsea bottle it in extra time?
What are the secrets of Liverpool's academy?
And the night it almost kicked off for me at the Nou Camp. I'm Ian Ladyman.
I'm Chris Sutton.
And it's all kicking off.
£6:30 PM last night, a tweet from the Chris Sutton Twitter account. Liverpool is a football club with a huge heart. Chelsea don't have a heart.
Yeah, and that was me who actually tweeted that. We have seen some Twitter accounts in sort of recent times sort of, you know, claim they're not from that actual account. But yeah, I did tweet that. And I felt it yesterday watching the game. Especially as they went into extra time and Jurgen Klopp chucked all his kids on. And you saw the way the game was panning out, and Liverpool have a cause, and that cause is Jurgen Klopp and sending him off out of the club at the end of the season with trophies, and Chelsea seem to be a soulless club at this moment in time. And then reading after the game, Pochettino's comments on that they, you know, would have been happy had it gone to penalties. That sort of justified. You know, my comment more than anything. You know, at the time, I didn't know that he'd actually said that, but that pretty much sums up both clubs. Liverpool had half a team yesterday, and Chelsea didn't take their opportunity. And then when all the kids went on, if you're a Chelsea player at that moment, that should have been the moment where they thought, right, what an opportunity we have. And yet they retreated and wanted penalties. That's pretty gutless. That's, you know, unforgivable.
Yeah, Mauricio Pochettino, the Chelsea manager, said afterwards that his players were tired. He said they started to lose their energy. The team felt maybe penalties would be good for us. Although the way that the Liverpool goalkeeper, Gallagher, was playing, I'm not sure that penalties would have been good for them. He was saving everything. That save early on in the first half from Cole Palmer was absolutely magnificent. It did make me think this morning. Paul Joyce, writing in The Times, came out with a great line where he said that the Carabao Cup is normally a tournament where you start by playing kids, i.e. in the early rounds. You don't normally finish the final playing with kids, which I thought was a superb line. Liverpool were forced to do so because of all her injuries. Came through what was a terrific game. I was at Wembley, a real ebb and flow to the game. Chances either end. Some pretty decent football played. And underneath it, of course, this pretty compelling narrative of Liverpool having six players under the age of 21 on the field, academy graduates, teenagers. We'll get to all that in a minute, the details of that. Jurgen Klopp afterwards described it as the most special triumph of his career. I think that's a stretch. He doesn't.
Yeah, because the way which they've done it, you know, I mentioned they had half a team, and you think the players that they were missing: Alisson, Salah, Szoboszlai, Nunez, Jota, Trent Alexander-Arnold. I mean, just think about that, and you think how can Liverpool possibly be on the run of form which they're in and keep getting over the line? But a lot of that is down to Klopp and the culture and the environment which he's created at Liverpool. that belief, that mentality to get over the line any which way they can. And that really shone through. And a lot has been made about the young players coming on, and I got that. But they have a cause, and Klopp is at the centre of it all.
Jurgen Klopp has won the Premier League at Liverpool, the first league title Liverpool had won for 30 years. He's won the Champions League at Liverpool. He's taken him to two other finals. Yeah, he thinks the dear old Carabao Cup win against Chelsea is the most special moment of his career. The people at the EFL, the Football League, who spend their lives being told that their competition is useless and no one cares, and they should take away the two-legged semi-finals, they'll be jumping for joy this morning. That is the best bit of publicity they could ever have. And you and I are sitting here grinning because we both like this tournament. We think it's part of our English kind of fabric of our game, even though it's actually only 30 or 40 years old. We love it. We think it should be kind of wrapped in cotton wool and kept and preserved and looked after. And there you go. Jurgen Klopp has done a bit in our camp and for the EFL as well. And fair play to him.
But it's the first trophy, Ian, isn't it? And that and we've seen, you know, what Klopp said about it. And then on the flip side, you've got Pochettino, where, you know, I said on I think on Thursday that this was a World Cup final to him. It was that big for Chelsea in terms of perception of Pochettino and the job which he's done. Had they won that piece of silverware, I think that he would have been elevated. And now, all of a sudden, I suspect we'll be talking about what happens to Chelsea moving forward. You know, is it going to be the end of Pochettino now? Should they stick with him? Should they make that managerial change? Because is he getting a good enough tune out of these players? And we know the answer to that.
You know what, mate? He looked devastated afterwards. Properly devastated afterwards, and I think that's because he realised the importance of this game for the reasons that you've just outlined there. The first trophy of his time at Chelsea, any trophy from a pretty barren season, a route into Europe, which it would have given him, that route now looks blocked. Chelsea are still 9th, 10th, 11th where they are in the Premier League, miles away from getting into Europe through league places. It was huge for him. What I will say, though now, categorically, is that when you look at Liverpool and you look at that team yesterday, you look at the young players, you look at the way they came in and they're able to play almost seamlessly. They look like they've been playing in that team all their lives, some of them. And I think that's because of Klopp. That's because of, I hate this saying it, but I'm going to say it, because of the DNA that now runs through that club because of Klopp. The DNA that Klopp's injected into that football club in the 9 years that he's been there. He's got his fingerprints, his footprints, his personality all over that football club. And I think if Chelsea want a bit of that, in an age where you can't just throw money at football squads anymore because of financial fair play, if Chelsea want some of that, then they should do one thing, and they should do it now. They should keep Pochettino and say to him, you do that for us. Because if they bin him now or in the summer, I don't know where they go. Well, I think I do know where they go. They go round and round and round and round in a circle. They've got to keep Pochettino.
I would agree with that. What I think goes against him from yesterday's game, though, is what happened in extra time. Whose responsibility is it when they went into extra time for the team to actually believe that they can get over the line when Liverpool put all the young players on? Is it down to Pochettino? Is it down to the players on the pitch? Because Chelsea finished the second half with the momentum, with the chances, and you thought, blimey. If I was, I put myself in a, I don't want to say in a Chelsea shirt again, but at that particular moment, when Liverpool were putting kid after kid on, if I was a Chelsea player, and they're more, I know Pochettino said at the end that they were, you know, similar ages, but if I was, you know, the Chelsea team had far greater experience. This was an opportunity, a moment for them to think, blimey, you know, Liverpool putting the kids on at this moment. Let's go for the jugular. Let's smell blood. What a great chance this is to actually transform our season and actually get people talking about Chelsea again. And they and Gary Neville used the word they bottled it. It's hard to disagree with that. They should have taken the game to Liverpool and been brave at that moment in time, and they didn't. They were passive. They sat off. They wanted penalties. I mean, you couldn't make that up.
Can I just say something? I think the £1 billion bottlers line from Gary Neville was a great line in terms of it's done exactly what Gary and Sky would have wanted it to do. It's got people talking. It's got headlines. It's given them what they want. And Gary speaks from the heart. I don't agree with him. I didn't see it. I didn't see Chelsea bottle that game. Chris, when did you ever see a team go gung-ho in extra time? No one goes gung-ho in extra time because everybody is thinking, everyone's thinking, shit, one mistake here and we're done. Sorry, I don't
but
really
that sums
buy
up,
it.
But hang on a minute. Hang on a minute. That it's about mentality. It's about seizing.
Piece,
it's about seizing the moment. But it's not the set piece. It wasn't the goal which mattered. And Pochettino coming out and saying that they wanted penalties tells you everything you need to know. The difference in mentality at both clubs, and they are poles apart. So it's actions. You know. It's all about the action at that moment. When they went into extra time, Liverpool Chelsea should have felt empowered that Liverpool were putting on all these young players and thinking, blimey, we are never going to get a better opportunity.
Can I just say something to you, mate? As you well know, because I've been kind of flooding your WhatsApp channel with videos from my holiday. I've just been skiing with a five-year-old, and I will tell you that kids don't feel fear. Kids don't feel fear, mate. And I think what you saw there was a bunch of kids playing for Liverpool who approached that extra time as though they had nothing to lose. And I think when you've got players on the field who've won World Cups and things for Chelsea, I think their mentality is different. I'm not excusing them. I'm just saying it's a little bit lazy just to say
they just didn't win, mate.
Okay. It happens.
Okay, well, so if Chelsea played Liverpool, Chelsea first team played Liverpool under-23s, who would your money be on?
Chelsea.
Exactly.
Chelsea, yeah, they didn't win, mate. They didn't miss the chances.
In extra time, they retreated. That's what they did. They didn't seize the moment and that opportunity, and that was their downfall. And that's where Pochettino has a problem, because who does the blame fall upon? Is the manager? He hooked Chilwell. He hooked Gallagher.
He's knackered, mate. He'd run his blood.
We're all knackered. We're all tired. I mean, I nearly knocked my microphone.
You're so tired,
over there.
You can't keep your microphone upright.
But hang on a minute. You don't take your leader off in that moment. Do you think Gallagher wanted to come off? I don't know. Maybe he's injured. Maybe I'm wrong. But surely you can, you know, see it through. I'm not buying the knackered thing. I'm really not.
So let's talk about Liverpool's kids, Chris, because despite what we may think about Chelsea's limitations and problems and weaknesses, etc., it was extraordinary to see a Liverpool team with Bobby Clark and James McConnell, who were both 19, Jadon Dance, who is 18, Connor Bradley had started the game, he's 20, João Quansah was on at the end, he's 21, Harvey Elliott had started the game. Extraordinary to see them do what they did. A brilliant achievement and a brilliant occasion. Now, I read a fascinating interview in the Daily Telegraph at the weekend that Jamie Carragher did with Alex Inglethorpe, who was the head of Liverpool's academy. Turned out to be a perfectly well timed piece ahead of what happened at Wembley. And there were a few takeaways of that I thought were fascinating. So at Liverpool's academy, there's a £50,000 a year academy wage cap. Now, that's a lot of money for a kid. We accept that. However, in football terms, it's not. You know, I know stories of kids who've left academies because they've wanted big money. No player at the academy is allowed to drive a car with a bigger engine than 1.3 litres. Mobile phones are handed in the morning at 8:30 a.m. and given back to them when they leave at the end of the day, and they are still given jobs to do around the place. I don't think we're going to go back to sweeping terraces and cleaning boots, but they're given
jobs. What's wrong with that? Did it detail the jobs?
No, it didn't, I'm afraid. It didn't. But I will get on. I just want to read something that Alex Inglethorpe said to Jamie Carragher. He said, "I was fed up of seeing a car park full of Range Rovers. They have to earn what comes their way. To get there, you have to do it on the pitch. Trent Alexander-Arnold is a really good example. There was no flash watch. He drove the same car for years. He would wear the same tracksuit. Now that baton has been passed on, with Trent ensuring the next in line display the same characteristics." Now, I love that. You're the ex-pro. You grew up in the old YTS days when you were paid a pittance every week and you were cleaning terraces. You were cleaning
£29.50 the first year.
There you go.
With a bus pass, £35 the second year.
So that from Inglethorpe sounds to me a little bit like a throwback, and I'd be fascinated to know what you make of that.
I like it. I tell you what I used to like about my old apprenticeship days, YTS days, was being in and around the first team. So we all used to have to get in 8 o'clock in the morning, clean. I used to have three players to look after, and that would be putting the kit out, cleaning the boots. Those players were Tim Sherwood, Paul Blades, and Ian Butterworth, first team players at Norwich City back then, where I did my apprenticeship. We used to have to scrub the floors after training, pick the dirty kit up, sweep the dressing rooms, do absolutely everything. But I used to like going into the dressing room, the first team dressing room, and the first team players would chat and take the mickey out of us. But that's where I wanted to get to. That's where what I wanted to become, a first team player. And it was all about earning the right. We used to train with the first team. We used to do a pre-season together, youth team reserves and the first team. And a youth team coach would always make a point of saying, make sure that you finish ahead of the first team, in the running. That's so important. They have earned the right. So being in and around that environment where I wanted to get to, listening to the first team players chat to each other when they spoke to younger players like myself, it was gold. And so something which has happened now, I think, at a lot of Premier League clubs is they are sort of separate, aren't they? The youth team training grounds and the first team training grounds. I don't think that that's necessarily a good thing. The stuff about the cars, the Liverpool cars, fascinating. 1.3, the biggest engine, whatever, and the cap on money, I think is really important. Because essentially, I don't know if you agree with this or not, you probably won't, but football is a working class game essentially, and most players who get into football don't come from affluent backgrounds, and you can have too much too soon. You always need that sort of carrot and that drive to get on. So the stuff with phones, I mean, phones are a nightmare across society. Most you walk down the street and you everybody's looking down at the phone, scrolling on the phone, but nearly bumping into people. I think that's a good thing. Concentrate on what matters, and that is your career. You're in your fledgling days. Focus on training 100%. Don't have too much too soon. And that's, I think it's brilliant if that's what Liverpool are doing, and other clubs should take note and copy.
Before we move out of this, I do want to mention Jadon Dans, one of them, the young Liverpool 18-year-old striker. So his dad, Neil, we know, was a player, played for Colchester, Crystal Palace, many, many others. But apparently Jadon Dans' grandfather, Neil, was also successful in his own field. He was a backing singer for the United Kingdom's 1987 Eurovision Song Contest entrant.
Really?
Which was a singer called Nicky, with a song called Only the Light. They came 14th in the 1987 Eurovision Song Contest.
Wow. And that's good.
Jadon Dans' grandfather, Neil, was a backing singer, and also, I mean, this just gets more bizarre the longer this sentence goes on, was also a UK skateboarder. So there you go. There's some high achievers in Jaden Dan's family. So he might have something to live up to yet. Now, before we stop talking about yesterday's game, I think we might owe a little bit of an apology to Virgil van Dijk, you and I. We've been on this podcast before talking about how Virgil hasn't quite reached the standards that he once set before that knee injury that he suffered at Everton, how he wasn't quite, we've been saying that he's still an absolutely top-class, elite-level defender, but not quite at the level he once was. I tell you what, he hit those levels again yesterday. He's absolutely magnificent. Ibrahim Konate wasn't far behind him, but Van Dijk was a leader in every sense of the word yesterday.
Yeah, I don't think we necessarily wrote him off, or I certainly didn't. You can speak for yourself, but no, I think the level which he was at a few seasons ago before he got that injury from the Jordan Pickford challenge, was some level, but I mean he was colossal yesterday. I don't know where I stood on the disallowed goal which he scored. That did seem pretty sort of harsh. To me, but that was justice, really. I think when he powered the header in for the winner.
Now, before we play a little bit of five aside, I just want to mention something that an option that's available to everybody who listens to podcasts in terms of getting their messages to us. We know that you can leave your comments on our social media platforms. You can leave them in the comment sections on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts beneath each individual show. But there's also a phone number. There's also a phone number that you can send WhatsApp messages to, or you can leave a voice note if you have a question or a comment about the show.
It's not my mobile number, is it?
Now, I was going to say, don't get excited. If you call this number, Chris Sutton will not answer the phone. Okay, I think Jobless Ben might answer the phone, actually. That might be what Jobless Ben's job actually is. Ben might answer the phone, but more likely that nobody will. But this is a number, put my glasses on to read it. It's 07796 657 512. 07796 657 512. That's our WhatsApp number. You can leave a voice note, leave a message, send us a WhatsApp. let us know what you think. Vote in one of our polls. Leave a comment, ask a question, and we'll get to it. Right, now let's play some five aside.
Are you ready to rank off? It's time for five aside.
Just talk briefly about Virgil van Dijk, captain's performance at Wembley yesterday. And so it's my turn to do five aside. I was away last week, as we know. I am going to nominate my five best Premier League captains of the Premier League era. And I'm going to go five up to number one. And in fifth place, I have got John Terry of Chelsea, the heart and soul, I think, of Mourinho's great Chelsea team at Stamford Bridge, a leader in every sense of the word. Number four, Vincent Kompany, Manchester City, a captain during a transformative time at the Etihad Stadium. Wasn't always the most popular with his manager, Roberto Mancini. Mancini thought Kompany was a bit too smart for his own good at times. Used to nickname him the Professor. I don't think Kompany ever knew that, but that was what he used to call him in his private moments. But nevertheless, Vincent Kompany, struggling at Burnley at the moment as manager, but a brilliant captain at City, lifted their first Premier League trophy, of course, 2012. Tony Adams is there for me at number three. Arsenal's great skipper. Adams absolutely could have decided that the newfangled methods of Arsene Wenger that were introduced to the club when Wenger arrived back in the day were nonsense, and he wasn't going to have it. And I think if he wasn't going to have it, everybody else would have followed him. But what Adams saw the writing on the wall, got front and central in terms of everything that Wenger wanted to do Arsenal, and led them through that glorious period. Number two in my list, Roy Keane. Of course, Keane was going to be in it. I always say about captains and great players, the really important and telling thing about a truly great leader, a truly great captain, is an ability to keep their own levels high when other players' standards are dipping. Keane always did that. He probably would have been my number one had it not been for a few things that maybe he did that maybe perhaps didn't set the best examples to his team. And there we go. And that leaves us number one, Steven Gerrard, Liverpool's great captain, simply because were it not for Gerrard, Liverpool would never have won that Champions League in 2005. Scored the game against Olympiacos to make sure that they didn't get knocked out at an earlier stage, and then started the comeback in Istanbul. So Steven Gerrard, my number one captain of the Premier League era. Chris, I'm sure you've got a view on all of that.
Well, I mean, firstly, there was football before the Premier League, Ian. You're a bit of a Premier League snob, aren't you? Well, a bit of a snob all round, really. What about the great stories of the Premier League? Little Blackburn Rovers, little Leicester City winning the Premier League, Tim Sherwood and where's Morgan? Steven Gerrard never won a Premier League. I mean, I'll grant you, he won the Champions League. How can you have Roy Keane in second?
Yeah, but Blackburn bought the Premier League, remember?
don't be jealous. You can't go down that route. Come on.
Well, you just called me a snob.
I think Gerrard at number one, great captain, which he was, bit of a stretch. My number one would be, I'm sort of older school though, aren't I? So I would say that the greatest leader, Tony Adams, I would.
Is there such a thing as older school? I think we're both old school. You've just declared yourself to be older school.
Yeah, but gone back to the start of the Premier League oldest era, school. Really. Older. But it's hard to look past Terry. I mean, you look at Chelsea now and what they lack, and I said no heart. But, you know, when Terry was there, when, you know, Peter Cech and Lampard and Drogba, that, you know, we should do greatest five spines of football teams. You wouldn't beat that one Chelsea.
Last week, when I was away, yourself and Dominic King talked about the five best players never to come to play in the Premier League, or who you would like to have seen play in the Premier League.
Dom didn't have Messi in. I mean,
Dom
can
did
you,
his list. He didn't have Messi in. Made that? A right mess of it. A couple of comments here. Joe Kilday on Twitter went number one, Messi, two, Maldini, three, Ronaldinho, four, Zidane, five, Iniesta. And Ryan Alder on Twitter, Messi, Maradona, Cruyff. Not sure Cruyff could have played in the Premier League, but there we go. Unless you meant Jordi. Zidane and Ronaldo, i.e. the original one, the Brazilian one. The player I would love to have seen play in the Premier League was Sergio Busquets of Barcelona, holding midfield player. What a player. I've mentioned him before on this podcast. Would love to have seen him play. Imagine putting him into the centre of Liverpool's midfield now or something.
Norwich City in the heyday, Busquets and Crook.
Yeah, I was just coming to that. There was Premier League football this weekend. We've been excited about the Carabao Cup final, which is great. There were very good wins for Manchester City.
That wasn't very good. It was a win.
Well, I think a win at this stage of the season, and you know this, having won a Premier League, a win away from home at this stage of the season when you're going for a title is gold dust, mate. And they won at Bournemouth, and that's all.
Maybe you said very good wins. It was,
because every win's a very good win.
It's an ugly Manchester City team. Do you know what upset me? And I'm really annoyed about this. Is you can see you're giving me a strange look, but in my fantasy Premier League team, I made a massive mistake at the weekend. Made a transfer, put Hoyland in, so I had to wild card. And in my wild card team, I put Kyle Walker in, Doku in, and Alvarez in. And Pep didn't start any of them. He didn't start any of them. Pep Guardiola is a disgrace.
I'm not interested in your fantasy football team.
Well, I am. It's ruined my weekend.
I'm not interested in your fantasy life. I'm not interested in any of your fantasies. But what did...
Don't toot your horn. You're not involved in any.
I think what did interest me in that the City selection at the weekend was De Bruyne, Grealish, Doku, all on the bench, which I thought was extraordinary in many ways. They won the game. Doesn't matter. Didn't matter. Won the game, but That was a weird one. I was also astonished to see Grealish there. Given before I went on holiday, I went to that game in Copenhagen when he went down injured. I thought we'd seen the last of Grealish this season. I spent about 5 minutes on the last podcast we did talking about the tragedy of the end of Jack Grealish's season. Turns out he was up and about within about 2 days. Miracle. Lazarus Grealish. Anyway, so it was a good win for City. I think it was a good win for City and a great win for Arsenal in hammering Newcastle at home. I begin to wonder, you know, looking forward to next season beyond, we know that there's uncertainty at a club like Liverpool because Jurgen Klopp is going, whether we are going to see a little bit of a breakaway with these three clubs, City, Arsenal, Liverpool, simply because the clubs that are trying to catch them and trying to kind of stay with them are so constrained now by the Premier League's financial rules that it's going to be desperately difficult.
No, do you want to go back to the old Wild West days to just spend what you like?
But if you're Chelsea, or you're Newcastle, or you're Manchester United, and you're looking to bridge that gap, that is going to be very, very difficult now. Very, very difficult. Newcastle's situation is extraordinary. The richest club in the world, already talking about maybe having to sell players to buy players in the summer. And yet, you know, here they are, seventh, eighth, ninth in the league, getting cut adrift from the top four, a position they occupied last season. It's going to be very difficult for them to get back there, just like it will be for Manchester United. You know,
Sir
Jim Ratcliffe can talk all he likes about building a bigger museum at Old Trafford and building a bigger club shop and knocking down the stadium and rebuilding it, etc. Although Ratcliffe's suggestion that he might do that with public money is absolutely extraordinary. I've never heard such nonsense in my life. But the thing that they need to do is rebuild.
Just to explain, I mean, I don't really understand where you're going with this. What's the thing about the public money? I don't really understand where you're going with that. So what's the issue with Ratcliffe and public money building a new stadium? I don't know either way.
So Jim,
if it's going to if he wants a Wembley of the North, what's the issue with that? And from what I've read, developing parts
pay for it himself. That's the issue. End of. That's the issue. You want a new stadium, mate? Build it. He's now a 30% shareholder of a football club that has been paying a dividend to its own owners, the Glazers, for years and years. A football club that turns over so much money each year and has a potential to make so much money every year. If they can't afford to build their own stadium, that's their own problem. Nobody built a stadium for Tottenham, yeah? No one built a stadium for Tottenham. They want a Wembley of the North. They should pay for it. Pay for it. Find the money, build it, pay for it. It's what everyone else has to do. Okay? That's simple as that.
I was just playing devil's advocate there. There's no need to be so aggressive. Does the North need a Wembley?
Doesn't need a Wembley more than it needs better hospitals and better rail infrastructure and better roads? No, it doesn't. So if you want us to talk about spending public money on the North, don't spend it on a football stadium. Manchester United want to build a new Old Trafford. Pay for it and build it and get on with it. I thought it's extraordinary. Just remarkable.
Hold that thought. We'll be back right after this.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
You're in Scotland. You were at Motherwell yesterday as Celtic had a bit of a squeaky one to overturn a half-time deficit To win 3-1 at Motherwell. 2 points behind Rangers at the top of the Scottish Premiership. Brendan Rodgers under a little bit of pressure, and this morning he's under a little bit of focus after giving this interview after yesterday's game to Jane Lewis of BBC Scotland.
Because, like I say, there's a story being written about this group, but we will write our own story.
Can you give us a bit more? You don't want to give us a bit more insight into what you mean by that?
No, you know exactly what I mean.
I'm actually not sure I do exactly know what you mean.
Okay.
Can you tell us if people might be interested to know? But you're the one that's bringing that up.
Yes, absolutely.
So can you not give us some more on it?
Done. Good girl. Well done. Cheers.
Not the first or last time we'll hear a manager give a rather tetchy post-match interview. Managers under pressure when they come to talk to media straight from games, adrenaline running and all the rest of it. However, I do think that Brendan will probably have woken up this morning to regret calling Jane Lewis a good girl at the end of that interview. I'm going to ask you, Chris, in a little bit what you make of it. I'll tell you, first of all, what I make of it. I don't know Brendan Rodgers well. I would never claim to, but I've been around Brendan for, you know, the decade or so that he's been in our lives as a football manager at Swansea and Liverpool and Celtic and Leicester and now Celtic again. I think Brendan Rodgers is a good guy. I think he's a genuine guy. I think he's someone who treats people well. I think he's someone who treats people equally. I've never heard a single story of Brendan being patronising, condescending to anybody really, never mind making a distinction on the matter of whether they happen to be a man or a woman or a boy or a girl. I don't think Brendan Rodgers is sexist. However, I do think that under pressure, that's a poor choice of words. And I also think, I was thinking about this last night when I listened to it. I think if I described a colleague at work as a good girl, I think I'd expect her to be pretty pissed off with me. And I think on the sly or on the quiet, I would probably feel that I wanted to say sorry for that use of language. And I wonder if Brendan's woken up this morning maybe feeling the same. What's your view on it?
I work up here, you know, a lot, and I understand the environment up here. I think Brendan, as you've said, is a manager under pressure. There's a title race on at this moment in time, and I think he'd maybe wake up this morning and accept that, you know, maybe he'd made a misstep. But some of the stuff I've seen online about, it's casual sexism. I don't think that Jane Lewis, who asked him the question, and actually it was a really good question about the narrative, and I'll come to that, but she's not taking any offence. And just with that, I went to interview Brendan for Sky at the start of the season, and he on a couple of occasions called me lad. That's his terminology. After most press conferences, you hear him say to the press guys, or some of the press guys, you know, good man, good lad, whatever. That's his terminology. I really think that, you know, we're going down a dangerous route if that's the way that Brendan speaks, and has always been very courteous with the press, as far as I can see, if we're you know, trying to pin things on him in a certain way. Was it condescending? I'm not going to argue with that, but this is a guy who's gone back to Celtic. He left under a bit of a cloud. We all know that. I thought he was really ballsy to go back and take the job. And, you know, he's taken the job, and it's been a really difficult season. The Champions League hasn't gone well. Second in Glasgow is last. The pressure is on him, and he would have been a bit cranky in the interview. His team are playing in fits and starts. You know, they're basically playing a half of every 90 minutes well, and that happened again yesterday. They were insipid in the first half. Second half, much better performance, got over the line, closed the gap at the top to 2 points. The stuff about the narrative, the question Jane Lewis asked, I thought was a legitimate question, because nobody knows what narrative Brendan is talking about. I can only assume he's talking about that people are expecting Rangers to win the league now, and that's sort of dead and buried, the title race, and he's trying to use that to galvanise his team and his dressing room. But this is a guy who's under pressure. He's come out, he's given an interview, didn't like the question, and that's it. But come on, let's not start reading into things which just aren't there, because that's not fair. If that's the way Brendan speaks, I was taken aback when he called me lad. He pat me on the head and called me lad when I did. You know, he just about reached at the start of the season.
Patted you on the head, did he? Yeah. Was he standing on a stepladder?
And I thought, oh, that's a bit odd. You know, it's sort of the same. But, you know, I don't like things like this when we're looking for things which simply aren't there. I think
I'll go back to where I started on it, which I do think it's a regrettable phrase, regrettable terminology. But most important, I think that Brendan will realise that. I hope that Brendan will realise that, and probably, you know, maybe have a quiet word with himself about it.
But there's also the thing, Ian, right? And this is a serious point, and we need to understand this. And I'm not, you know, it's up to individuals the way they want to view what Brendan said, you know, and how it was said, and was there any underlying meaning in it? You know, that's presumptuous as far as I can see. But managers come out, and we do need to understand this, and you will understand it better than me. Managers come out after games; they're in highly pressurized positions. And they are emotional, and they are pumped up because they are so desperate to do well. There is no other city, and you work down south, and we know the money the Premier League has. There is no other city like Glasgow in the footballing world, as far as I can see. You know, is a goldfish bowl. It has that reputation. This is a guy who is under the pump. His Celtic team haven't performed as they should have done this season. And he's I think he's feeling it, and that's the long and the short of it. So we have to understand that as well. But you know, I do think it's not right when we're going down these routes and looking for things. If he didn't use the terminology sort of. Or ever use terminology like that, I could sort of understand where they're going, and you know, he'll probably view it as a misstep. But you know, he calls everybody good man, good lad. You look at the Sky interviews he does with Luke Shanley, you know, good man at the end. What are we doing?
Talking of cranky and pressure, there was a little bit of that on show at Molineux. On Sunday, as Sheffield United lost 1-0 at Wolves. Two Sheffield United players, Vinicius Souza and Jack Robinson, squaring up to each other on the field. Bit of a pushing and shoving match. Heads briefly kind of touching. Although I think if that had been kind of opponent for players from either team, at least one of them would have ended up on the floor. That's the way it tends to happen these days. Exaggerating contact. But bit of an argy-bargy. Chris Wilder said afterwards it didn't bother him. In fact, he thought it was indicative of team spirit and a will to win. You've been there, of course, not directly involved. Your time at Blackburn, David Batty, Graham Lasso, December 1995, Spartak Moscow away. That was fisticuffs.
Ooh, proper scrap that, wasn't it? Uppercuts and hooks, a proper one. Not like the one yesterday was nothing.
The thing about the Lasso and Batty one was that watching it back last night, Lasso seemed to throw the first punch, which I think was pretty brave.
Yeah, there was that. And if you see, Tim Sherwood throws a punch as well while breaking it up. And who did he throw the punch at?
Oh, really?
Who does he throw the punch at? Lasso. You'll know David Batty, spiky Yorkshireman. But I mean, they just had words, and Lasso was a feisty character, but Batty reacted and did what everybody else in the dressing room wanted to do at that particular time, and bang Lasso out.
What was the issue with Lasso?
How can I talk? He was a good player, Graham, but he wasn't shy. I mean, you know, you'll see him on the media circuit now. Here, and we've all mellowed a lot. He couldn't sort of help himself. He had I don't know whether I should say this, a form of Tourette's, I think. You know, he sort of just, if he felt something, he would say it. And David Batty good Yorkshireman, you know, didn't take to what Lasseau said very well. So let him know with his fist.
So you're essentially saying that David Batty eventually did what everybody else in that Blackburn squad had been wanting to do for quite
absolutely.
A while.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What was your view on it? Because I'd look, and I'm not
you are.
Bringing this up to ridicule.
You are, I was on the bench.
You were on the bench, but were you still on the bench at that point, or had you come on?
Just, what, it was 12, 15 minutes into the game, I think. So I hadn't, it wasn't that desperate.
What was your view on it? And what was, you know, and what was the reaction on the, amongst the subs?
Go on, Batty. Go on. Have him.
And what was it like afterwards? I mean, what's the dressing room like at half time after that's happened? Are they shaking hands or is it carrying on?
Nah, most footballers bear grudges. It is literally like I watched Match of the Day 2 last night, and Ashley Williams, they were saying these things happen, you know, pretty often, and they do,
not on the pitch.
You have to restrain yourself. I saw the Dyer Bowyer scrap. That was pretty good. But on the training ground, somebody would try and attack me most months. I don't know why. I was misunderstood. There was a guy at Celtic called Oliver Tebbeley who I got in a skirmish with, and he threatened that he was going to come and beat me up in the evening in the hotel. So I made sure I put a chair behind the door. He would have ripped my head off, Oliver. But yeah, he always used to get really tight on me in training, and I threw an elbow, and then I knew that he would, you know, he would do me in because, you know, he was more handy than me. But you can't back down in that moment. I was just hoping that the lads would get in the middle of us. What about you boys at the? I mean, who would you like to bang out at the Mail?
Right, I'll tell you a story. Right,
here
I'll
tell go. You. A Who's tried to hit you?
I will tell you a story
after a couple of pints.
I'll tell you a story. Got to make a decision on the hoofy about whether I'm going to name names or not. I don't think I am. Everybody who was there will remember. They should know who I'm talking about, and he's a mate.
Can I guess after?
I'm not going to name him because it's not fair. But I'll tell you a story. So we're at. Well, put it this way, you know him as well. So we were at Barcelona, Manchester United away in Barcelona. It was a Champions League semi final when. United drew 0-0 in the first leg. I think Ronaldo missed a penalty, and Scholes scored the screamer in the second leg to win the tie. Anyway, so there'd been a story the night before the game in the Nou Camp. And normally on these trips, without getting into the minutiae of how it all works because it's tedious and nobody cares, but usually on these trips, a lot of information is shared amongst journalists because there is a bit of collaboration goes on between organisations. It's the way it goes. And normally on these trips, there would be a bit of that. But for one reason or another on this trip, information wasn't shared. Some outlets had a story that others didn't about a big Man United injury. And I'm not going to tell you which side of the fence I was on. All I will say is that at the end of the game, this thing had simmered all day before the game because... There's journalists on one side of the fence, journalists on the other, those who'd written it, those who hadn't, and it simmered all day, and it simmered through the game, and it simmered through the press conference after the game. And as we were leaving the press room at the Nou Camp to go down the stairs to the player interview area where they were getting on the bus, this journalist, it exploded. It had been simmering, and then it boiled over. And this guy came at me, and we were finger jabbing and arguing and going at it, and all the way down. It takes about 5 minutes to get from the press conference room to the interview area at the Nou Camp, and all the way down the stairs, this argument was going on, and it was getting louder and louder, and then it would stop, and then it would start again. And eventually, when we arrived in the interview area, just as the Manchester United players were walking through, It went off. It kind of got all.
What do you mean went off?
Well,
come on.
It began to get physical. And all I remember is that myself and this other guy, essentially bigger than me, essentially squaring off in the interview area at the Nou Camp as Cristiano Ronaldo walked past. And apparently the look on Ronaldo's face as he looked over this kind of sea of cameras and notebooks and tape recorders to seeing these two... apparently I was in a kung fu position. Apparently, I don't know what I was intended to do. I've never done any martial arts in my life. I've never had a fight.
Hong Kong Fooey.
Apparently, I was in a Hong Kong Fooey position, right? And then, the look on Ronaldo's face was one of absolute incredulity. Apparently, that these two guys were about to go at it in this essentially what was a glorified underground car park. Anyway, it never happened.
So my question is, people got
between us, and it never happened. Thankfully, never happened.
Would you have done him?
Oh, absolutely not. No, absolutely not. No. I think my kung fu position, I think that was my first position. My second position would have been to do the 100 metres as fast as I possibly could. But I tell you what.
20 seconds.
That couldn't happen these days. I mean, that happened now. It'd be on social media. Somebody would have been filming it. It would have been out there. Me and Hong Kong Fu would have been ever entwined on social media had that happened now and not 15 years ago. Now, quickly, before we get into our moments of the weekend and talk about football again, apart from my, as opposed to my amateur boxing career, let's do a quick poll, and this will go up on Spotify after the show's finished. Very, very quick poll. It does look pretty much as though Burnley and Sheffield United are heading down, but who is going to join them? Let's have a poll on Spotify. Let's have in the poll, I think we should have Luton, Everton, Nottingham Forest. Let's have those three. My money would be on Luton. I said on the podcast that it did before I went away that I just think their fixtures, they've got very, very difficult away games. I think it's going to be too much for them. I think Luton will be going down, so the three that came up will go back down. But let's have a poll on Spotify. Luton, Everton or Forest. Now, moments of the weekend. I think you should go first.
Well, it's sort of full circle, this. We started about a tweet and finished with the tweet. Now, poor old Michael Beale. I thought he was unfortunate to lose his job as Sunderland manager. But I don't know whether you saw this. It's widely reported, this story about he had certain support on social media, and then somebody did a bit of digging about the positive tweets about Michael Beale on X, saying basically that he was doing a good job, and they tracked down that particular account, and it was Michael Beale.
Yeah, it's a little bit. It reminds me a little bit of the old Wagatha Christie kind of Rebecca Vardy, Colleen Rooney thing. Really, it does look as though Michael might have been bigging himself up, and it didn't help him.
Would you ever do stuff like that? Have you ever done stuff like that?
A burner account?
Well, you got a burner phone?
Well, I'm always on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, leaving glowing reviews for this podcast. So yeah, you know, I'm disappointed that you haven't been as well. No, and I've never been, and I've never had a Twitter parody account. When at the top of this show, you started by essentially suggesting that people occasionally claim their accounts are hacked, etc. I thought you were about to tell me that you had a parody account, a Chris Sutton Twitter parody account. Would Farmer Sutton, we could call it, would be something. Although, to be honest, I don't think anybody could actually send you up. I don't think anybody could invent a life for you on Twitter that would be as bizarre and unconventional and completely over the top as your life actually is.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, that's a compliment in a way. It's a compliment. It's just that you do manage to juggle. You manage to juggle quite a lot of responsibilities to children, horses, donkeys, dogs,
cats,
media organisations, football.
Made a mouse in the bedroom last night.
I've never heard it called that. What do you mean? In Sutton Towers?
There was a mouse in the bedroom.
You're not short of cats to kind of sort that problem.
No, we get the cats upstairs.
Whose bedroom? What in the master bedroom?
In the big bedroom. Yeah.
Oh really? So what did she do?
Screamed.
Right, and called
screamed and called me. I said, well, it's quite tricky. I'm, you know, a couple of hundred miles away, so I can't do anything about it. I tell you what, get a cat upstairs.
It's about time.
So I'm even
It's about time there's some screaming in that bedroom. What happens at our house? Seriously.
Well, in your bedroom,
What happens in our house?
Where are we going with this?
Is that I tend to come home from trips abroad or trips to London. I actually once came home from a World Cup. I've been away for 6 weeks. And I came home and I walked into the lounge. Watching that. And Vicky just pointed at the corner. So what's that? She said, you need to sort that out. And it was an upturned cup. It was an upturned cup. And there'd been a spider in it for 4 weeks.
No.
Spider in it for four weeks. That was her way of dealing with it, which is, think there's a spider in the corner of the room. I'm scared of spiders. I'm just going to put a cup over it. And it stayed there for 4 weeks.
Spiders are really important.
I know.
Really important spiders are.
Well, look, if you want to get in touch, do so, let her know. I did. Right, okay. Oh, my moments of the weekend. We're running long on this show.
I thought that was it.
I'm going to make it quick. So I've got two, obviously. My rugby league team, Wigan Warriors, are now world champions. They beat Penrith Panthers at the DW on Friday in the World
Cup. Penrith? In the World, up the M6?
Penrith from the Blue Mountains, New South Wales, Australia, Chris. A terrific win for Matty Pete and his brave boys. Although I do have to say, the try that made the difference in that game, i.e. essentially the winning try. Honestly, you think we've got VAR problems in football? Let's have a look at the try. It was never a try, and it still wasn't overruled by the video referee. So there we go. But well done, Matty Pete and his brave Wigan boys, champions of the world. Who would have thought it?
Winning with a debated try. Well done.
In terms of football, Fulham's second goal. I loved it. The winning goal at Old Trafford. Normally what happens in journalism is when a team like Manchester United loses at home, everybody talks about Manchester United and how bad they are and what a terrible performance it was and about their problems. It's not right. Supporters of smaller clubs get wound up by it. So let's just say here and
Fulham, a small club.
Brilliant, back to front, one end of pitch, winning goal when they were under pressure. Fulham have been to Old Trafford before in recent times and had victory snatched away from them, particularly in the FA Cup, I think, last season when they did themselves a lot of damage with a couple of sendings off. That was a brilliant goal and a brilliant way to see out the game. So well done, Fulham. Now, that's it. We're done. A bit of a long show, a bit of a varied show. Thanks for being with us, everybody. I'm delighted to be back from my holiday and doing this again. I do miss it when I don't see you, Chris, whether it's in person or staring through your laptop screen from a hotel room in Scotland as you are right now. So thanks for listening. One thing I would ask, please, whether you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please subscribe. It's really important. Please leave some comments and also let us know where you are listening from, because we find that really interesting as well. We'll be back on Thursday for our It's All Kicking Off weekend preview show. It's FA Cup week, by the way. So we'll have a few of those games to talk about. Big game for Man United at Forest, big game for Newcastle at Blackburn, big game for Chelsea, I believe, at home to Leeds. So we'll have some of that to look back on as well. Thanks again for being with us. I am Ian Lederman. That other guy is Chris Sutton. This has been It's All Kicking Off.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.